Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
Welcome to the Make It Right podcast. I'm Janet Eastman, and this week on the show, we're going to talk about how to use effective communication strategies to ensure your business is pursuing Gemba. I'm sure you're familiar with this term, but to clarify, Gemba in business refers to the place where value is created. And in manufacturing, that's the factory floor. My guest this week has over 30 years of experience on the factory floor, growing up in a manufacturing family and then climbing the ranks to lead manufacturing companies as CEO. He's worked with international supply chains and his experience has crossed cultures. Now he provides his expertise and insights to organizations, helping their teams navigate through the culture, language, and distance challenges of the new Gemba. Sam Yankelevich is also a speaker, an author, an industrial engineer, and a LinkedIn learning instructor for global project and operations courses. He's a busy guy. I'm delighted to have him on the show. Welcome, Sam.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Janet. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Now, you basically, it's my understanding anyway, and I could be completely wrong here, but sounds to me like you actually grew up on the factory floor.
Yeah, that's correct. I was kind of inducted into that. You know, after traveling as a young person and being educated in the U.S., I went back to my native country of Colombia, where my grandfather had set up a pretty large manufacturing company. We were making locks and hardware. So after studying industrial engineering in the U.S., I went back to start to take care of business. And since you mentioned Gemba, that's where my grandfather sent me. He didn't put me in an office. He sent me to the Gemba, straight to the shop floor. Where stuff happens, and you know, that was both the tooling areas and all of the physical processes. And so kind of grew up doing that for quite some time and gained a lot of insight.
And so, yeah, so from there, how did you end up? I mean, I'm guessing that you worked your way up through the family company and then moved on from there.
Yeah, so I spent at the beginning, I mean, I spent probably 70% of my time on the shop floor working with the people that were actually getting things done. You know, I'm talking about toolmakers, all of the supervisors, the operators, even taking care of union issues. And then 20 to 30% of the time in the offices, learning the sales process, starting to understand really management, you know, the management side, the leadership side, and getting acquainted with the financial end of the business as well. And finally, you know, there was a transition at one point where, you know, there was enough information for me to get into the, you know, to the presidency and to the C-suite and start taking care of the corporation.
Okay. So manufacturing, I mean, you've seen it all the way through that, your career. Manufacturing has changed. It continues to change. Tell me about what you've seen through this transformation.
Yeah, so I think that what we used to refer to as the manufacturing floor, the shop floor, is, you know, sometimes we think of it as something being inside four walls, where you can actually go out there and visit the processes and see what's going on. But, you know, lately, or not lately, in the past 20 years, I've seen so much outsourcing, even globalization of processes. And so manufacturing looks more to me like a web of interconnected processes. And these interconnected processes have to be managed by teams of people that somehow have to communicate, because these processes are no longer under the four walls or under one roof. They're distanced. You know, they're not, you know, they're separated physically, separated sometimes by time zones. And so that has been, for me, an important change in what we used to consider manufacturing, you know, integrated manufacturing, vertically integrated manufacturing. It's now all over the place. And so this presents, you know, of course, a series of different challenges in addition to the traditional challenges of manufacturing, you know. And some of this is reflected in what we call today supply chain. Supply chains, to me, are nothing more than processes that are adding value to be able to do these outsourced, projects and these global manufacturing things. You need the supply chains, and supply chains have become part of the manufacturing process. So, well, I wouldn't separate the two, and I consider the two to be, just one of the same.
Right.
One of the same, yeah.
So, I mean, manufacturing now, it's global. It involves, like you said, communication across cultures and geographies. So if there is a miscommunication, it can be really very costly with quality delivery costs. You must have seen some stories, some things that have happened and the impact they've had. So tell me what communication, or rather miscommunication, has done when you've seen that happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, let me go back to this topic of processes. You know, to me, as an engineer and somebody that grew up on the floor, I was always looking at processes, and communication has become a critical process because of that. You know, that distance and geographical separation that I was talking about before, and the communication issues are affected by things like distance, language, and culture, which are things that I actually mention in my latest book, which is Walking the Invisible Gemba. And a few things. I mean, because we talk about communication issues and those obstacles and globalization so freely, but these are specific opportunities to learn how to deal with these issues. So a couple of situations, for example. So let's talk about time zones, and you know how time zones impact manufacturing today. You know, when we think about time zones, we think about people sitting somewhere else. You know, when we're going to sleep, they're actually starting the day of business, and vice versa. But what that really means is availability. The availability of somebody that you need to get a response from that you might not get after 3 days because there might be 12 or 14 or 18 hours difference with whoever it is that you're outsourcing something, where there's a process or maybe a supplier of a component or a raw material. So it's an availability problem to get a response, and that creates a timing issue. The other thing with time zones is that when you don't know the other person, communication suffers, because you might be on the phone with somebody or on a conference call, and they might say something like, you ask them to get something done, and they say yes, they're going to get it done. Well, when you know somebody intimately, and or you have them in front of you in a face-to-face situation, the yes to you might mean yes, it's going to get done, just as you expected. But with time zone differences and these distances, that yes can mean, yes, I understood what you were asking me to do, but it doesn't mean that they're going to get it done. And often after 2 or 3 weeks, you find out that it didn't get done. You find out the hard way that yes meant something a little different. So that's, with respect to distance and the time zones. Culturally, I mean, there's many stories. I like this story, which is really an extreme story that created a lot of problems and a very expensive issue. There was this was between somebody in Germany and somebody in Mexico. Let's call the guy in Germany Jürgen, and it was a female in Mexico. Let's call her Lupe or Maria. And, Jürgen sent an email, and it was something urgent that needed to be taken care of so that the manufacturing process would not be interrupted. And at the end of the email, because it was important, Jürgen put an exclamation mark. Sent the email. Well, the two had not met. I mean, they had worked together by email for probably about 3 years, but they had never met, never spoken on the phone. When Lupe received the email, the only thing she focused on was the exclamation. And what I found out later in a workshop that we were running is that an exclamation mark, or having all caps on an email for some people in Mexico and for this particular person, it was insulting. So what did she do? She deleted this email. and so Jürgen, 3 days later, doesn't receive a response, also because of the time zone issue. And so he sends a follow-up email. And because now it was super urgent, he put 5 exclamation marks. So imagine what she did. She erased email, called her IT department to double expunge it from the system. And whatever the task had to be done, never got done. Situation blew up. It became a crisis. And from what I remember, it was like hundreds of thousands of dollars of losses because of this cultural misunderstanding that was really a communication thing. And think of it. I mean, we send emails back and forth every day. And when I asked them in the workshop, you know, hey, are you going to avoid this from happening again? They said, well, maybe we should have picked up the phone to clarify. It was that easy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's not kindergarten. We really just behave like adults and do that kind of thing. And then one last thing that I see often happening between cultures is the way we understand agreements and commitments. That's notorious. You know, some cultures, they say, yeah, they commit, they agree, but then things don't get done. And when you go back, the way they agree, the way they commit, they just misunderstood what they were committing to. They didn't really understand it. They understood it differently. Some Asian cultures, for example, commitments and agreements are temporary because things change. So they say, well, you know, we agreed to that at that moment because of the circumstances, but circumstances change. So we need to renegotiate now. So these are cultural things that are impacting our manufacturing, our supply chains, and they hit that triangle of quality, delivery, and cost. I think somehow this really has to come up to our, you know, to our leadership awareness to be taken care of in, you know, a little bit more robust way, I would say.
Right. So are you saying then the real communication challenge is the fact that we're trying to operate across time zones and cultures and things like that, or is there a deeper communication problem?
I think that the underlying factor that I have found is that we don't really understand what communication is. You know, I ask people, hey, did you communicate with that person to make sure that they're going to get this task done? And the reply is, yes, I sent her the email. Mm-hmm. We spoke on the phone, or yeah, I told him or her. I said, that doesn't mean you communicated. That means you sent a message. What did they understand? Did they, you know? And so I always remind people that the word communication comes from the same root source word of the word common, as in common understanding. You know, that's the most important thing. The problem with communication is that we don't see it. It's invisible. That's why I, you know, called my book Walking the Invisible Gemba, because communication precedes action, but you can't see communication happening. You can see the results of a miscommunication or of a good communication, but it still impacts our manufacturing. So that's you know, the key is it's invisible. The other issue I see is that we in leadership, and I was also you know, creating some of this problem when I was in a leadership position. To me, I just labeled communication a soft issue. And by labeling it a soft issue, it kind of disappears from our radar screen because my only responsibility is to take care of the hard issues, the physical processes, which of course is not true. And so leadership and a lot of us would just delegate communication to human resources department because obviously it's theirs to take care of. And so that's I think the underlying factor. Communication is the first to recognize that it is everybody's responsibility. Just like Dr. Deming said, quality is everybody's responsibility. Then to me, communication is everybody's responsibility. And before we really commit to that, then I think we're going to continue to see this challenge and it's going to continue to impact our operations.
Sam Yankelevich has over 30 years of manufacturing experience, and he now shares his knowledge with other leaders as a manufacturing coach, author, and speaker. He's going to join me again next week to explain how he works with companies to improve communication. And if you're interested in more information, you can also check out his 4 books on lean manufacturing. Until then, please follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and YouTube. I'm Janet Eastman. Thanks very much for listening to the Make It Right podcast.